Chapter 15. Haveia. The relationship between Tarakuma and the wider Council of Human Interests was a complicated one. And from Haveia Mundi's point of view, it was entirely unsatisfactory. Officially, the system was in the heart of the colonies. It even had a seat on the council. In practice, it was what was called a ward borough, along with perhaps a score of other worlds. Tiny outposts, science stations, terraforming operations, or planets that had no interest in engaging with Hugh, but needed to be looked after anyway. Then, there were worlds like Tarakuma, where there were plenty of people, but no legitimate authority. Every year, some councillor or other said that Hugh should move in on Tarakuma, root out the gangs, lift the standard of living. There would be a study, the appalling cost of the operation would be duly reported, and the project would end up shelved until next time, when those same figures could be updated and represented. Haveia knew full well that people in his line of work had a use for places like Tarakuma. He himself had arranged clandestine meetings there, received covert information via its informants, and hired operatives who wouldn't ever appear on the books. Some of his colleagues were completely at ease with that side of the job. He didn't judge them, nor did it escape his notice that several had ended up kicked out of the service after becoming a little too personally involved. That was the problem with associating with criminals. It led to Newtonian espionage. Each action produced an equal and opposite reaction, and you couldn't use without being used in turn. Tarakuma was the worst den of villainy that Hugh oversaw. Its position at a nexus of throughways had brought many sinners together inside one atmosphere, and Haveia was bleakly aware that some of their dirty money stuck to the hands of high-up people in Hugh. Another reason it would never see reform. There was a Hugh station in orbit, hosting a reasonably equipped Mordant House sub-office. The department's formal name, the Intervention Board, was a bit of a joke in these parts. Nobody was intervening on Tarakuma. Heading up the Tarakuma office required someone who was simultaneously unambitious and grimly devoted to the service. Such was Albus Solier, who came to meet Haveia at the dock.
"You're after Vulture God and the Imaru," she said,
without even a hello or a formal introduction. A broad, very dark woman, 10 years Haveia's senior at least.
"You've got them,"
Haveia guessed that was too good to be true.
"They've been through here. Some fireworks, some raised eyebrows, some very angry people down below. Interesting friends you've got, Agent Mundy."
"You've a dossier?"
"I've all the rumour and fiction you could wish. As to what we actually know, well, step into my office."
Albus grew plants for a hobby, or at least Haveia assumed the spiky, faceted things were plants. Decorative enough, so long as you didn't end up cutting yourself on them. He drew up a stool as she misted them with something that smelled faintly of burning hair. Nothing about Tarakuma was nice. An aide came in with a slate, the promised dossier. He opened it up idly. There was a timeline, a cache of contacts, incident reports, and a longer and woollier file of perhaps and maybe.
"Let me summarise what we do know,"
Albus said, turning from her plants.
"The Imaru and Vulture God turned up in system a couple of days ago, far enough out that we almost missed them. A Partheni packet ship went after them the moment they appeared, as did a Marauder-type vessel from one of the local docks. They fought, and the Partheni won out, meaning the girls were punching way over their weight class, frankly. They docked at the Vulture Imaru and then jumped out of system. The Marauder limped back later with casualties.
Who's the Marauder registered to?
Do you honestly think that information is of any practical use?
She had linked to his slate and pulled up the relevant documents for him. Some shell company registered in Scintilla, where a million meaningless puppet enterprises had a fictional existence. Track back, he directed. And she walked him through the chain of events, layering the evidence on his slate as she spoke. He took it in, but the spectre of a Partheni military action within the colonial sphere was looming large in his mind. Then, one detail snagged in his brain and he said, "Wait, they visited a what?"
"A lawyer, of all things."
Albus showed him the Partheni packet runner parked up in expensive surroundings.
"A dock rented by a prosecutor Livo Threnikos, ex-Scintilla dropout. One of the standard sorts of leech fat in these parts."
Hevea sat back. The same Partheni packet runner had left Luncrow, and according to his information, the Vulture's crew had been on it. So was the whole thing a Parthenon operation? And if so, what did they know about the architects? He tried to get a gut sense of just how big this mess was, and failed. Everything was just ghosts in the mist. "I'll need to get a packet ready, encrypted, for the next runner going anywhere."
"Facilities at your disposal,"
Albus confirmed.
"And?
Book me an appointment with this Threnikos," Hevea said.
He'd planned to go planetside in his media typist persona, but right now he reckoned there were better ways to crack the nut.
"Tell the son of a bitch we want to talk about his tax returns."
There were no local requirements to file returns. However, people in Threnikos's position did business off-world too, which gave Hevea a cover. He couldn't say for sure that Prosecutor Livo Threnikos had some skeletons filed away inside his tax returns, but something definitely had the man on edge.
"Nice view."
Hevea had deliberately come dressed in Berlinhof standard clothes printed at the Mordant local office. As always, they hadn't been able to properly tailor for his odd shoulders and wrong-sized feet, so nothing quite fit. Threnikos himself was dressed in a manner Hevea recognised as glittery business pimp. It made Hevea proud to be a little unkempt.
"Shows my polyaspora roots."
Stupid, but the thought gave him a little glow.
"It's better in the first few weeks of summer," Threnikos cleared his throat, which sounded pleasingly dry. "There's, migration of some of the local wildlife."
Hevea was supremely uninterested.
"Prosecutor Threnikos," he started, emphasising the title with some irony.
Sure as hell, nobody on Tarakuma ever got prosecuted for anything.
"You wanted to check something?"
Threnikos had the fiction of his tax documents up on a virtual screen. He waved at them, nervously.
"I'm aware that the entertainment expenses for my Amaryllis trip were somewhat high, but that's just how they..."
"Prosecutor, I'm not averse to twisting your arm over..."
Hevea consulted Albus's notes.
"What looks like 19 solid hours of brothel time? I mean, I could refer it for investigation, recommend a fine, or I could just assume that Amaryllis is a fun place and your clients like being put at their ease. However, if you answer a few innocuous questions, we can pretend I never spotted your epic brothelathon."
Threnikos was observing him, still very nervous, but not the nerves of your typical tax evader, or even someone with a weird fetish they didn't want raked up.
Can you put into plain language what you mean, Officer Mundy?
Hevea checked the surveillance readings on his slate and raised his interference field. He didn't want this business recorded.
Threnikos watched this, then said, Mordant House?
Hevea nodded.
Thank God for that. That's an unusually enlightened attitude to take, Prosecutor. Most people aren't too happy to see us.
Threnikos finally dropped into his chair.
Better than actually having to go through the tax stuff.
He was trying to be cool now, but Hevea could still see the tension in him.
I need to talk to you about some visitors. Oh, I know exactly who you're here about, Threnikos told him, and if I'd known just how much trouble they were going to be, I'd have said no. Just an introduction, that was all they wanted. Who knew it would end with space piracy? I assure you, officer, I was acting entirely in good faith. A favour for an old friend, even, if you can believe that.
Hevea found it within the bounds of credibility.
You met with Kerry Almier, plus some shabby spacer and a Hanny Factor.
Threnikos glanced at the slate Hevea showed him, picked out the face of Rollo Rostand and the shell pattern of Kittering.
Like I say, all above board, just an introduction. You probably won't believe this, officer, but just about everything that goes through this office is sunny side up. When my clients come to me, it's for the legitimate side of things. They've got the crooked stuff covered. Introduction to whom? Hevea pressed.
He was getting twitchy himself now, seeing the man's nerves just keep mounting.
It's not me he's worried about, so...
That was the point when the office door burst open and four thugs came in. Hevea whipped a gun out, a magnetic pistol that wasn't quite an accelerator, because it was hard to fit a meter of barrel in a concealed holster. Three of the intruders were human, a woman and two men in rough ship-style clothes with reinforced jackets, all armed, all tough-looking, and there was something about the woman that suggested not entirely human. The fourth, leading the way, was a squat hiver frame, four-legged and headless, their chest sporting three serpentine manipulator cables and what he could only describe as a rotary cannon. Threnikos was very still and not at all surprised.
Officer, these are my new clients, representing the Broken Harvest Society. They share your interest in my earlier visitors and in anyone asking questions about them. And the currency your new clients are paying you in is?
Not skinning me and wearing me like a cloak, yes, the lawyer said.
Like I said, if I'd known the kind of trouble Kerry was bringing to my door. But I didn't. I had no idea.
Words spoken very clearly for the benefit of the newcomers. Especially the woman, who was coming forward now, studying Hevea.
Government man, she said. My name is Heremon, herald of the unspeakable Aklu, the Razor and the Hook. I am sent to tender you the most cordial invitation to confer with my liege and master concerning a commercial shipping matter, specifically the freighter Omaru, which has been stolen from us.
What a cordial invitation.
Hevea sat on the edge of Threnikos's desk and had his internal dispenser calm his heart. His gun was directed right at her chest, but Heremon didn't seem to care. Her own weapon just dangled loose in her hand. Of course, the hiver's piece was basically light artillery that would turn the whole office into an exercise in Brownian motion if it spun up, so maybe she felt she didn't need to ram a pistol up his nose to make the point. Heramon smiled. It wasn't a nice smile, but there was at least a spark of humour there.
"We do hope you'll accept," she told him, making a fair attempt at a high-class Berlinoff accent.
Hervey wondered whether to double down on the government card. To say Hugh Ritt ran thin on Tarakuma was something of an understatement, though. Besides, all that string of titles was a hegemony thing, which put them even further from caring a damn about his precious authority.
"Well, I'd be churlish to say no then, wouldn't I?"
He scratched at his jaw, activating his locator beacon and sending a message through his slate to Threnikos's linked desk system. When he left the room, it would send Albus his personal recording of this conversation, or that would be the ideal result, if nobody out finagled him. Heramon actually swept a bow, like something out of a COD historical media type. Hervey caught a glimpse of the segmented louse-roach-looking thing melded to her spine. Oh, right. He'd heard of the Tothiat, but that was as far as it went.
"This is it, right?"
Threnikos burst in, trying very hard to keep his voice steady.
"We're clear now. Your boss is okay with me?"
The Tothiat woman gave him a level look.
"I'm sure we'll be in touch, Prosecutor. Now, Menhir, if you'd be so kind."
She offered him her arm. The Hiver took 3 metal steps back as he took it, keeping him in sight of their gun. The fact that it would chew Heramon to pieces too, if the weapon fired, didn't seem to upset the woman at all. They took him to a service port at the edge of the vertical city, and for a moment, Hervey thought they were just going to throw him down the chasm. His career might not have survived that. But there was an A-grav platform waiting there, a hovering disc 3 metres across, with a profoundly inadequate railing. He stepped aboard brightly enough, sending a signal to his metabolic balance to up his coordination and response times, in case this became acrobatic.
"Mind telling me what this is about?" he asked Heramon, as they ascended up the chasm and downwards through the social strata of Coaster City. "The prosecutor and I were just discussing some taxation matters, so..."
He gave her a sidelong look, staked his life on his character judgment, and went on,
"If you need some help filling in forms?"
He received the slightest twitch of a smile, which was reassuring. He didn't know how human Tothiat were, but a sense of humour seemed a good start. Then she said,
"Don't do jokes at our meeting, human. My master is not in the mood to be amused."
"This Aklu?"
"The unspeakable Aklu, the razor and the hook," she recited in full, with a hard look at him. "My master is not casual about his honours."
"Which means precisely what the hell, exactly?"
Hervey wondered. Matters had suddenly gone sideways as far as he was concerned.
"What does he want me for?"
"It's enough that he wants you."
Heramon looked away, and that, apparently, was that. There were another 3 toughs waiting at a higher platform. The atmosphere was thinner here, and the sunlight a hot glare against his skin. His medical monitor cautioned him about exposure times. He had no way to explain to it that the shit he was in counted as mitigating circumstances. His comms implant received a ping, telling him the local office had his position. Hervey didn't particularly want to become the focus of a firefight, but he was starting to feel curious now the initial shock had worn off. He scratched at his jaw again, casual as anything, sending the command, "Hold till my signal. Just hope I don't regret it." Not quite a prisoner, but far from a free man, He was cordially escorted to some concrete dump of a place, cracked and pitted and bleached by too much solar glare. Inside, he was brought into a scene of utter carnage. He missed the main feature of the room for some time, because the bloody foreground had his full attention. A couple of humaniform castigar and a dozen humans were standing around watching someone getting flayed alive. Hevea just stopped, eyes bulging. He uttered a sound that he'd thought a career at Mordant House had ironed out of him. They had some luckless bastard strung up by his wrists from an agrav frame, while a six-armed golden hiver with a sad metal face vivisected the poor sod. They'd pinned back his chest and abdomen, opening up the ribs and holding them in place with clamps and vices. The victim's intestines and various other organs were spread out in an eerie halo about his body, floating in the agrav field. He was somehow still alive, his blunt face locked in a savage grimace. His blood, and there was a lot of it, was also suspended in droplets. The nimble, darting arms of the hiver were gathering them to draw designs in the air, a sanguine litany of alien art. The most terrifying thing about this barbaric alien spectacle was that it wasn't quite barbaric or alien enough that Hevea couldn't see the pattern. It reminded him of nothing so much as what the architects did to worlds. There was old history between the hegemony and the architects, wasn't there? The clam bastards had suffered and lost worlds for an age before they worked out their trick with the originator toys. Didn't it make sense, then, that the trauma of those cataclysmic days had wormed its way into their psyches and their art? But this... The victim groaned and gasped, and the hiver took hold of his elbows and spun him gently. His array of innards, though they were no longer in, rippled like serpents around him. The blood patterns undulated and formed new arrangements, a message that Hevea was grateful he couldn't read. Then he saw the black and yellow arthropod thing melded to the man's back. And understood. Another Tothiat. He wasn't watching an execution, but a punishment for failure. Then he looked past the display and realized he had been in the presence of the unspeakable all this time. There was an actual real live Essiel right there, hovering in its couch, watching its will be done. The hiver stepped away from their work and daintily shook their arms, the skin of blood sloughing off them into the agrav field, leaving their hands gleaming and clean. At some signal, a couple of watchers stepped forward gingerly, queasily even, and slid the victim away. His wounds were trying to heal, Hevea saw, but the agrav field and clamps prevented the man's bloody-minded resilience from doing its job. It must, he reflected, really, really hurt. A tortured, groaning sound shook the room, and the Essiel's array of arms flurried. The hiver took a light step forwards and regarded him with their frowning gold mask.
Crows gather, yet the shadow of the vulture passed above us, crossing past the bound of the horizon. Know this, mordant man, seek now to dip your beak, and you will meet the fury of our wings.
Hevea blinked at them, then at the enigmatic bulk of the Essiel Aklu. There were no crows, no birds of any sort on the Essiel homeworld. They were an earth thing, long extinct, save where some planet had resurrected or transplanted them. The words were an attempt to give a human gloss to alien sentiments, and he translated all that flowery doggerel as, "Hands off, it's mine." And, mordant man, His tax officer ID wasn't fooling anyone. Or likely the Broken Harvest had access to some back channel, which had made him, even as he entered the system. Or else, the divine Essiel could read minds? I mean, who actually knows for sure? Well, and he addressed the bivalve master, not the cyborg servant, it is, of course, an honour to be in the presence. You'll forgive me for not knowing the proper etiquette, but let's take the awe and respect as read, if we could. Another basso rumble from the creature, joined by a tortured groan from the flayed Tothiat. Haveo was proud that his voice had been steady, devoid of either fear or awe. Before the Hiver could start their rigmarole again, he added, "You were talking about something belonging to you that my people have no claim upon. I hope I'm not here to discuss that. I'm on Tarakuma for information. I came from Morden House, as you say, because some space has dragged a ship here recently, one that has been wrecked by architects. I imagine you appreciate why that's of interest to us." The Hiver took three precise steps at an angle to him, arms spread in a fan that mimicked the rayed figure on the thug's banners. "The drivers of destruction that have brought demise to worlds are of no interest here. We seek what's ours, and let not Hugh or Mordant, nor the lords of the hegemony itself, step between us and our treasure." "No interest," Haveya echoed. "The architect's return is of no interest." He looked around at the audience of thugs and monsters. "You wouldn't raise an eyebrow if one of them arrived in the sky over Tarakuma." They still seemed profoundly unimpressed, which was either criminal sang-froid par excellence or just utterly inward-looking stupidity. Unless this Aklu carted around its own originator defence kit. "Well, look, I don't know what you're seeking, but it doesn't sound like it's anything to do with us. I'm after bigger fish." The unspeakable Aklu actually shifted slightly in its couch, and he saw the whole assemblage hinge and flex beneath its weight. The trio of red globe eyes spread wider, as though trying to find a crack through which to weigh his soul. A long, slow vibration built through the room until the walls shook and everyone around him tensed. He saw hands go to knives, to guns. Heramon, the other Tothiat, stepped into a fighting stance, and Haveya found himself matching her. He was ready to go down swinging, if that was all that was left to him. "Died for the honour of Mordant House. Lousy thing to go on your permanent record." "Know this," the Hiver chimed, their bell-like voice clashing with the mood in the room. "Not all the nations of the world may stand between the razor and its mark. We do not fear the tyranny of state, nor brook the bite of laws. What we shall do is that which we decree."
"You're not afraid of us, right? I get that."
"Goddamn gangsters facing down the whole colonial government, apparently, while hiding in a bomb shelter on an armpit world."
"You'll do what you need to do, to get whatever it is that's been taken from you. I get that. Like I say, it's the prospect of architects destroying whole worlds that has us all flustered."
On the basis that he was as screwed as he was likely to get, he wagged a finger in the Hiver's face.
"You put that in a respectful way, you hear, because I do not know the dance steps around here."
To his surprise, the golden head revolved, giving him a moment of smiling regard from their other benevolent face before returning to the exaggerated frown. They paced through a half dozen stylized attitudes, strutting before Aklu like a peacock, arms folding and fanning repeatedly.
The SEL thrummed and belched, its own myriad limbs fluttering like a debutante's fan.
The compact is agreed and reverence given, the hiver announced.
Then everyone relaxed, just like that. Everyone except the tortured Tothiat anyway, who didn't really have the option. Hervea didn't like the sound of the words, which implied he'd just signed up to something, possibly as a representative of the entirety of Hugh and the colonies. But that ship had left dock and gone into the void. He'd just have to live with whatever misunderstanding had been perpetrated.
Maybe I agreed to give them back their jug shipment if we get to the Amaru first.
Well, we'll see. Other heads would handle that. And that could actually happen, if someone felt the broken harvest would make a useful tool in some other mordant house gambit. A back door into the hegemony was no small thing, even one that might slam shut on your leg without warning. Back at the local office, safely in orbit, he completed his report and fed back to Albus. It was her bailiwick, and she probably needed to know.
An actual SEL?
She shook her head, already updating the records on her slate.
Right, who knew?
They were eating colonial style, which meant working at the same time. Back on settled colonies like Berlinhof and Magda, people made a big show of sitting down just to eat. But this was the true colonial custom, and Hervea preferred it.
Who knows how rogue this Aklu is?
Albus considered.
Or maybe going rogue is just like a midlife crisis for them. Or it's pathologically insane or ill or something we don't even have a word for.
Well, it's doing a damn good job of playing gangster right now, Hervea said. And there was some damn thing those spacers took that it was really pissed to lose, which backs up why they'd send a whole pocket warship to go meet the Amaru. I mean, there's a basic law of resources here, no matter who or what you are, and that's a considerable investment. Damn me! I mean, how many Terracuman factions actually have military-grade ships to throw around?
Oh, enough,
Albus said, with the air of someone who's reported the problem on multiple occasions to no avail.
What's your next step? How can we help you?
The Vulture crew has an int, so they could have gone to spread panic anywhere with that damn architected wreck. And right now, the only way I can get news is via the packet trade. So I'll have to sit tight until I hear where they've docked, or...
Or?
Or we hear some other ship has been found turned inside out. Or, if we're really lucky, it won't be a ship, but a planet.
In the end, he almost missed it. However, Albus's data crawlers were particularly thorough. He'd been looking for the Amaru, assuming nobody could miss something like that turning up on their doorstep. But the Vulture God crew had just ditched the wreck instead, stashing the thing in the deep void. Doubtless until they could auction it to the highest bidder, if that was their plan. Although just what their plan was had become a wide open field. They certainly hadn't shown up anywhere Hervea would peg as a hub of intergalactic intrigue or commerce.
I need you to send a priority packet ship. I'm going to need an int pilot sworn to Mordant House, if I'm going to keep up with these famies, he told Albus.
The old insult for starving spacer pirates seemed particularly appropriate for the maverick Vulture God crew. Then he sat down to work out why in all hells the Vulture had just arrived at Jericho.